Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. So you're in charge of a company that operates globally. Your client base is spread across the planet. Your team is not exactly massive, but is also scattered around the world. Everyone's in a different time zone. Everyone is from a different country and culture. You need to keep your customers happy, who often need your support at an hour's notice. You need to keep your team engaged, committed, and firing on all cylinders. How the hell do you do that? Sounds like a tall order, doesn't it? But it's the daily reality for many CEOs and business owners, one of whom is here with me today. Robin Kent has spent 30 years in advertising, from junior TV buyer at Saatchi & Saatchi to global chairman and CEO of Universal McCann, responsible for 120 countries. Robin has spent the last 10 years growing R Sports, a sports tech and consultancy firm working with leading international sports federations. According to his doctor, he's an aging athlete, but clearly the doctor doesn't know what the hell they're talking about because the guy sitting in front of me looks 10 years younger than he actually is. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Robin, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for that bit of flattery. I will take that all the way to the bank later.
Take it all the way to the bank, as many banks as you can, cash it in, because yeah. It is honestly true. You do not. I'm
thank
not going to reveal.
No, age, thank you. I'm very flattered. And yes, I don't feel my age, that's for sure.
That's the most important thing. Talking of age, when you were little, who did Robin want to be when he grew up?
That's an easy one, because this would give my age away. Let's say I was a child during England's magnificent win of the World Cup in 1966. And I would have wanted to be Martin Peters, the midfielder for England, the guy they often said was 10 years ahead of his time. I'm trying to think who he'd be equal to in today's world. Kevin De Bruyne, maybe Jude Bellingham. He was an outstanding player. So that was me in the playground or in the, my dad had a pub. So, and there was a big wall out the back. So I could play football all day, every day. And that's really all I ever wanted to do. Sadly, I wasn't good enough. I did have a trial at Luton Town, but no, I didn't succeed. So there you go. So that was my early ambitions were destroyed early on. You know what?
Sad to hear that. Of course, the idea of not giving your age away, that's just literally just gone out the window.
Of course,
but
yes.
We tried to protect it, but you know,
I was an embryo. the problem is though with football, it's kind of stayed with me. It's been the one thing consistent. I'm an Arsenal fan, right? I can't hide that fact, good or bad. It's the one thing that's consistently stayed with me from a young child all the way through to where I am now. So it's lasted longer than marriages. It's older than my kids' ages, you know, and I presume it'll be with me until, you know, I walk off this planet. So yes, I have to live with the torture of that on a regular basis.
Or being into football or being an Arsenal supporter?
Well, being an Arsenal supporter. I mean, at the moment we're top of the league, but I'm not fooled by that.
Listen, it could be worse. You could be a Tottenham supporter.
I know. That's the one thing I am grateful for. That's the one thing I am grateful for.
North London rivalries.
Rivalry, sorry. Yeah. Because one of the things I do in my spare time, I won't spend 2 seconds on this, but I actually do have a football podcast where I run a fantasy football league with about 80 odd members, and we now do a weekly podcast, one of the guys and I. So yeah, so I'm often complaining about something.
There you go. Well, in that case, do send us the link and I'll include that in the show notes for those fantasy football fans.
Absolutely. Get out.
We were supposed to wait until the shameless plugs until the end of the episode, but I'll let it slide. Don't worry. Jokes aside, of course. Plug away shamelessly as you will and when you feel like it. But I know what you mean about the element of sports being with you. We've chatted about it before. It's something that usually is ingrained in us, whether it's some sort of competitiveness or just the need to move. Right? I'm a completely different person when I move, when I physically exercise, and when I don't. And I noticed that more than ever during COVID, when usually my activity was consisting of some sort of weight and strength training.
In
the gym, I wasn't able to do that. I love running, but it's usually chasing some sort of ball of various shapes.
Yeah. Running for running's sake is tough.
Exactly. Yes. I was struggling, right? And I was genuinely seeing the drawbacks of that. It was difficult for me on a mental level, on an emotional level, just to kind of deal with that. That release of all of that stuff, of emotions, wasn't there because I was nervous. So for me, it's a massive thing. And I also weave in a lot of analogies from the sports world, from how we build teams, how we manage teams, how we lead teams, from the sports world into the world of work, of organizations, because I see a lot of parallels and I think that we can learn a lot. Rugby, for me, from a team sports perspective, is amazing.
Yes.
The culture around it, absolutely brilliant. Compared to football, unfortunately, culture, to put it blatantly, just absolutely sucks. As much as I do like the sport.
It's more the fans than the players, although the players, I think, wind up the fans.
There are certain rules in football gear that just don't get. One of being is, why the hell don't they have the same rule as they do in rugby of there's only the captain can talk to the referee. That would minimize a lot.
They've tried it, and at the beginning of seasons, it's been okay. And if anybody else has joined in, they've been booked. It's a bit like time wasting. They've added longer time on at the beginning of the season. Halfway in the season, they drop all these things.
I stopped even watching football. I'll watch the big tournaments, mostly the international ones. But I'm a Juventus supporter. Have been for over 23 years now, I think. So I watch them occasionally, but it's been tough. It's been nearly as bad as being an Arsenal supporter.
But what about your native Polish team, who have now qualified for the
Euro on the back of the Welsh, basically? You know what? I've got a lot of opinions about that in terms of, for example, Robin Lewandowski. I think he's an amazing player, but he should have retired from the national team long ago because it's a classic example of somebody who is impeding other people's growth. Not intentionally. I'm not blaming him. As such, is just that quite naturally the tactics will be leaning towards him. It will be a natural inclination to get him the ball when needed rather than other players. It's normal psychology of other players. And I think that's the detrimental element. So as much as a great player as he is, he's also, I don't want to say liability, but a bottleneck for the team as a whole.
Yeah, he's coming to the end of his career and he needs to probably step aside. I mean, there are a couple of your players that, obviously, I love, one being Szczesny, the goalkeeper. I was so distraught when he left Arsenal. And he left because the manager caught him smoking cigarettes in the changing rooms. And that's what he's still doing.
He's a chain smoker.
I know, but it's like, that's not a major crime. You could discipline him, but you don't get rid of him when he was actually a better goalkeeper than whoever we brought in as replacements. And now you have the young defender, Kivior, who is an Arsenal player, and he's just started to break into the first team at the latter part of the season. Yeah. He's doing really well. So, yeah.
Good stuff.
And I don't like the Welsh.
There's a risk we're going to ramble on and about football or other sports.
Business.
Let's put a comma into that one for the time being. Our sports, can you tell us a little bit? What do you do? Where are your clients? And kind of what's the makeup of the team, because I've alluded into that in the introduction, that you're spread across the world and your customers need you.
Can
you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, of course. It's quite an interesting story in the fact that when I was living in New York, I left advertising after 30 odd years, and I was looking for something to do. And a guy I knew had got some investments in a bunch of different companies, and he asked me, to help him grow some of them. One of them being R Sports, which at the time was a software system platform, if you like, to operate a roller hockey rink in San Diego, California. And he said, I'm investing in this should I continue to invest in it? And I, my view was, well, if the technology can do what it says it can do, there's another story. This is a global opportunity because amateur sports around the world is not well served with technology, or certainly wasn't, you know, 10 years ago. You could argue now there's quite a lot of apps, but there are very few platforms that, you know, can really do multiple things and do them very well on a global basis.
What type of tech are we talking about for amateur clubs?
Sorry, it's...
What type of tech? Because you mentioned that the technology for that for amateur.
Oh clubs, yes, well it was a basic registration platform at the time built on Ruby, so it wasn't that sophisticated, but it was actually something that, you know, they didn't have. And I traveled the world through advertising. I was fortunate enough to, and obviously being a, you know, a sports fan, I recognize, you know, how big cricket is in India. Living in America, they don't even understand what cricket is, even though it's played quite frequently in America, in New York, in Queens, and now in LA, and other such sports around the world. And I could see that, you know, everything was being, for amateurs, it was all being handled by pen and paper. And if you think about it, the amateurs count for 99.9% of all the people involved in sports, which is one of the reasons really why we've stayed away from professional sports, because they have money, they throw money at solutions, yes. But I mean, if I was to work with, say, Arsenal Football Club, none of the other clubs would work. So I'm not interested in working, you know, at the professional level. Although some of the sports we have, some of the athletes at the very top are professional, but it's a tiny few.
So R Sports is a registration platform on the board. That's how it started, and now is it still that, or is it managing the entirety of kind of the back office
for various sports? I mean, I'll give you an example. So for Muay Thai, which is the federation for that, is IFMA, the International Muay Thai Federation. We do all of their events globally. So we register everybody, then we put them into their brackets, that, so by weight, by age, by gender, so that they're able, so that, you know, A knows they're fighting B, and we map all that all the way through, so that you go from the start to the finish of the tournament, and that everybody meets everybody at the right time. We do the live, so we built in the last few years a really sophisticated live scoring system. I say sophisticated, or if you like, state of the art. The reason I say that and to support for that is that both Atos and Swiss Timing, if they have Muay Thai in any of their events around the world, they really have to use our system. I mean, there is no other, you know, Muay Thai scoring system that compares with ours. So we've built that over time. So, you know, we have the judges have the live tablets. The scores go up straight away. Each judge doesn't know what the other person's score is. So there can be no cheating, unlike, say, some sports, but we won't mention. Goals goes on the scoreboard at the same time. So the audience know if it's live streamed, if, you know, everybody's fully aware. That data then goes back into our system, and each of the athletes or fighters, they have now a history of their fighting success. So they are able to build a profile around their wins, their losses. If they wish to, they can add video, they can promote themselves, they can, you know, use social media to talk about how they have, you know, how successful they were in this tournament. But they have a true record of their sporting or their Muay Thai sporting life. And it's something that, you know, I didn't have as a kid. So I can tell you I was one of the world's greatest footballers, but I can't prove it. But then again, you can't disprove it. Other than I never became a professional footballer. So I suppose we could disprove it that way. But now we try to do that across the multiple sports we work with, so that kids have a history, so they can look back. And, you know, when they're older and they've got kids of their own, they can say, look, I fought in these tournaments. I was a Muay Thai fighter or a kickboxer. And I fought in this, you know, I was the world champion in 1987, and I got a gold medal. And, you know, here's the video. Here's, you know, proof of it.
That's bad. That is awesome.
So we're quite excited by that. Although I'm not sure anybody else is, but I see it as one of the major benefits.
As Seth Godin, I don't know whether you've heard of him.
Yeah, I know Seth.
He often says that it's not about the why, you know, as big as audience possible. It's about having, I think he refers to them as hardcore fans. Yes. And I think that either the figure say 500 or 1,000 or something like that. If you've got a loyal following of a group of people like that, you're golden. From a business perspective, that's enough to keep you going. So it's not always about having as big a market as possible. So as long as you've got that, which I believe you do, then as Seth Kerr says, you're golden as well. Okay, so you multiple sports, multiple federations across the world. What about your team? Where are they based? They're scattered as well, aren't they?
Yeah, the team are scattered. And it's quite interesting for me because as I grew up in advertising, we were always in the same building. There had to be a physical location that you all went to. And it was great. When I was at Saatchi & Saatchi in London, it was fantastic because I was in media. So you had media on one floor, creative on another, account management, planning, you know. And we would all either meet at the pub at lunchtime or we'd meet on the corridors, you know. So if I wanted to talk to one of the creatives, I'd just go up and say, look, I've got this idea for doing blah, blah, blah. And we'd have a chat about it. And all those things were great. And often you would have like those elevator conversations or the corridor conversations that you can't, it's very difficult to replicate in the world that we live in now. And I think COVID was interesting because COVID affected a lot of people in that those people that were used to working in offices and in integrating had to obviously work from home. And if you're a young person starting out in life, unless you're in the techie world where you don't mind spending a lot of time on your own, it's a very difficult life, I think, to work remotely. And so therefore you have to really find the right type of team. I mean, our team is majority of men. It's not by design. It's just how it's happened. And they are, as you say, they are spread all around the world. So we have people in America on both the East and the West Coast. We have people in Europe. We have people down in Asia. We have some Russians in the team who left Russia for obvious reasons. They did want to be part of what's happening. And, you know, they're living in various parts of the world. So our biggest task, I suppose, our biggest challenge, although it doesn't really seem a challenge now because we're all so used to it, is communicating on a regular basis and using the tools that people like. And some people prefer different tools to others. Like some people prefer Telegram, others prefer WhatsApp. And so you have to be a bit flexible in terms of, because that happens with clients as well. So it's all very well saying to a client, well, we only use Telegram. They go, well, I only use WhatsApp. So we have to be, you know, or Slack or something else. So we have to be, you know, very flexible. And I suppose all of us have to get used to using different platforms. Like some clients want to use Zoom. Some clients want to use Microsoft Teams. You know, we're very happy to use Google Hangout because it doesn't cost anything and it works perfectly. So it really kind of depends on, you know,
that's on the client side. So I kind of get, and I've got the same challenge, right? My preferred tool for years has been Zoom to run workshops. Now I've discovered a new tool that I absolutely love, and I know I've already introduced you to it, and that's Butter. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love that tool from a facilitator's point of view.
I love the name as well.
Love the name as well, indeed. But then I will still have to adjust. Sometimes I have to adjust for security reasons. That, you know, I have to be set up on as an employee with an employee account and emails on a customer server and system, and we have to run it through Teams or whatever they're using because, you know, security is very important, and you know. Those are the adjustments that we have to make towards our clients. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But internally, for you as a team, do you unify communication channels, ways of communicating, processes to kind of simplify these things? Or is it more, okay, we're doing it this way, it's a little bit hectic, but it works, so let's not touch it?
It's hectic. But it would seem hectic to the outside world. It might seem hectic to you. So for example, my business partner, Paul, lives in New Jersey. I'm based just outside London in the UK. We speak every day. our favorite mode of communication happens to be Skype, not for any other reason than we don't have to put something in a calendar for a meeting. He'll message me on WhatsApp with Skype question mark. I'll say yes, 5 minutes, and then I'll Skype him. And then we're chatting away like you and I are now, you know, face to face. And if I need to share something on a screen, we can share and do all that. So that's kind of how we communicate. Sometimes, like last night, I was watching telly and couldn't be bothered to come to the computer, so I just called him on WhatsApp. But again, you know, because no one wants to pay international calls, right? So, which could ruin a small business like ours, you know, overnight. So that's how we communicate with him. After this meeting, we have a weekly team call. We have lots of weekly meetings, but we have a weekly team call, and that will be on Google Hangout, whatever it's called these days. And, you know, for that, again, everybody will sign in from all over the world, wherever they are, whatever time zone they're in. We'll have a quick catch up. We'll try and keep it to an hour, no longer. The idea is who's doing what, any new business leads, any problems that we don't already know about. I mean, you know, we don't have to wait a week to find out a problem because, you know, it either comes up on the Telegram groups we have, mostly Telegram groups, and we have different ones either for some of the tech guys in the Philippines, some of the tech guys that are in other parts of the world, different groups for, you know, different clients. You know, so I have one with two or three of the guys for our World Kit client, for example. And then I'll have a weekly meeting with them. Sometimes we have daily meetings of, you know, one of our big clients in the US where we'll jump on for an hour and, you know, go over stuff, try and work out issues. So we are constantly communicating. So it doesn't seem as if we're, you know, on another planet, if you like, because we're all used to working from home. We're all used to communicating on a regular basis.
I don't know if you've got the plans to do so, but if you were, hypothetically, to scale your business, not drastically, but let's say add another 25-30% of people.
Yeah. However, or even double.
Even double. That's usually when things start to unravel and come apart at the seams.
Yes.
Do you feel that, or which parts of how you work would have to change to be able to?
Well, I remember working in advertising agencies, and one of the things that got me was around the time I left Saatchi, because I got in an elevator and there was two girls got in. I don't know, secretaries, account handlers. I don't know. I'd never seen them before. And they'd obviously never seen me. And I'd been at Saatchi for 6 years, and their comment about, oh, you know, don't know who these people are. You sort of think we've got too big. And then when I moved to a smaller ad agency, Liga Stellini, we realized that once you hit 100 people, and maybe it's a little bit like the Roman legions, I think it's 80 in a Roman legion. At 80, you know everybody's name. When you get above that, it starts to become quite difficult. And especially if you're growing quite fast, you're constantly hiring people. So we've been lucky so far in that a few people do a lot, and those people have been incredibly loyal. And, you know, apart from one or two that we asked to leave, I don't think anybody who we want, one person who we'd like to have stayed left. So I think that's kind of, you know, tantamount to the type of people we are and how we work. But you're right. I'm aware of that. But again, that's one of those, you know, and I've been through that before because, you know, I think when you said, you know, I was at one point responsible for 120 countries, 6,000 people, yeah, $18 billion worth of media spent for very large clients. You can't micromanage. You know, you have to have a regional directors that you trust. They can micromanage the next bit down and they can micromanage below that, but you can't do everything and know everything all the time, which is a issue for me because I'm one of those people. I like to know everything. Even if I'm not going to do anything with it, I somehow feel like if I got on a meeting with our team and they'd been talking about something for a week and I didn't know about it, I'd be like, what's happened?
Interesting. I can't help myself but pull at that thread. Why is that? Why do you feel the need to,
I know? I think it comes from working in big corporations where you're often in the dark, either deliberately or just accidentally, on things that can have a major impact on you or can have a major impact on your clients. And that can be down to people just thinking you don't need to know, or you're not senior enough, or, you know, I didn't think you'd care. You know, it can be multifaceted, but it happens. And I think when I was running media at McCann, there was a lot of internal aggression towards my group globally, because in a way we delivered most of the money, but the money we delivered was then spent on, you know, buying creative directors new Porsches, something, as opposed to I'd have a situation where I'd have a contract from a client, you know, a global well-known brand, and it would say I had to have so many staff in, say, Austria in the office. And I would say to the head of the Austrian office, you know, I need, my contract says I've got to have three of these and I've only got one, and I've got to have two of these and I've only got one of those. What are you going to do about it? And it'd be like, well, I haven't got the money. I had to buy the creative director a new car. And I'm like, okay, well, you do realize that client, global client that you happen to be lucky enough to have in your country by virtue of the fact that, you know, we've gifted you this, is going to leave and go somewhere else, because they're going to say to me, Robin, you're not staffing as per the contract. Bizarre, but that would happen. So I think it's probably a past thing. And I also think because we're small and every dollar is important, I want to know how it's being spent. So I want to know that if people are going to a tournament in Thailand and they're flying from X, Y, and Z, I want to make sure that we're not sending an extra person, or, you know, we're not sending somebody a week before so they can sit on the beach. Mm. Not that they do. I mean, we don't have those issues, but just, it's really a question of, and I want to be on top of things that when our guys want to negotiate a contract with a client in Mexico, they talk to me about it, because A, I've got a view on it, but B, I also need to know. I don't want somebody saying, oh, look, I've done a great deal. And I look at it and go, well, who's the great deal for?
You know? Yeah. How do you?
And we've had a lot of that. And that, I'm as guilty of it as anybody else.
How do you think that is perceived from the employee side, or how does that impact them?
Well, how we communicate. The approach you'd like to know.
I see your reasoning, and to a certain degree, I agree. But I'm always interested in thinking, okay, how does that impact the employee? Because I'll give you an example that I often come across. Is I have managers, leaders, business owners saying, I bloody can't take a holiday. They can't do anything without me. And I know now from experience that in most cases, the source and the root of the problem that we're dealing with is sitting in front of me. And often it's in the form of, I'll ask a simple question. When you go on holiday and you put your out of office on, do you check your emails? 9 times out of 10, the answer is yes. And the follow-up question is, do you reply to any emails? Do you jump in on any of the conversations? And they say, yes, I do. Not all of them, but honestly. There's nothing more that says, I don't trust you and you don't know what the hell you're doing and you can't do it without me, then do just that as a
No, I get that. Let me try and answer that. Most of the time, they come to me for advice. Most of the time, I can say, yes, you just told me the solution. So what they're looking for is basically, you know,
a rubber stamp.
I work 24/7. I don't really work 24/7. So if I go on holiday, let's say, for example, I will check in. I will check my emails. Doesn't take long. I will, and it's part of wanting to know, but it's not part of not trusting people. Because there is a constant stream of stuff that comes. And, for president of a federation, let's say a country, let's say Germany have called the president of the federation, complained about something, I'm not going to leave it 2 weeks before answering. I mean, it's like, what, you know, it's It's just not. But the other side of it is I either give a very quick answer because I know the answer, or I will quickly message one of the guys and say, hey, Thomas, you know, this has happened, blah, blah, blah. What's the story? And then I'll go back to the president quite quickly and go, this is what's happened and this is what we're doing. And then that tends to calm down all of those situations. So what I do, and it's the same if you ask me what my working day is, right? I get up in the morning and I go training and nothing gets in the way. I've had people say to me, yeah, but we really need to be on a call because we've got the Philippines and we need to be on a call at 6 a.m. And I go, no, I'm training. Sorry, I'll be back by 7 or 7.15, right? No, but I'm sometimes up at midnight or depending on where it is. But other times, you know, this is an unusual day today because I've got a number of client meetings afterwards. But often I would have this meeting with you. I'll go watch telly for an hour. You know, I'll go and catch up on, I don't know, Twisted Metal or The Gentleman or you know, Sexy Beast.
You mentioned a very important thing, an important distinction in all of this is that there's a difference between wanting to know and being kind of in the loop and not trusting people. A lot of the time it's the latter that's masquerading as the first one, right? And I think that's the trick.
But I'll tell you why I trust people, why I trust our people. I don't have any choice because I can't walk. If I was in the days when I could walk around the building, I could see the people that came in early, the people that stayed late. Doesn't always mean they were working. But, you know, there was you could tell a pattern. You could see who was having meetings with him. You could walk in, you could eavesdrop for 5 minutes and go, yeah, okay, those guys have got a handle on that. And then you could wander off and I could maybe go to a different floor and talk to somebody about something else. You can't do that now in the virtual world. That's not possible. Mm. So I have to trust that our guys are doing a full day. Now, do I know they are? I mean, like yesterday, I was talking to one of our guys and I messaged him saying, you know, I need to talk to you about X client. And he said, yeah, I'll be back in an hour. So we got on the phone. He said, there was a lot of wind today. So I went windsurfing. I'm like, that's fantastic. Because I know he's working at midnight or I know he's working at 6 in the morning. So if he wants to go windsurfing for an hour and he can fit it in, God bless him.
Go for it.
And could we do that with 1,000 people? I don't know. I mean, maybe this is what Apple and Google try to do.
But it's in a different way because you've got, you know, various ways of doing that. One of them is having self-organizing teams. You can go all the way into Thiel principles if you want, by Frederick Laloux, but you can stop halfway there and still have self-organizing teams by breaking your big 1,000 strong company into smaller independent teams. But that's a different topic. In a way, you've already sort of alluded to or mentioned the answer to my question now that kind of connects to what you just said. How do you keep people aligned on the goals? Because, you know, you trust people to do their thing whenever in a way suits them, depending on wherever they're based, and they kind of manage their work. But how do you make sure that everybody's aligned on what the goals are and where the projects are and what you do? You mentioned the kind of the weekly catch-up things. You stay kind of on track on that.
Yeah, so there's the daily. So the majority of the platform was built on Ruby and the majority of the engineers are in the Philippines. They're not necessarily all either in the same building. Actually, they used to be, but after a few storms and things, I think they all work from home now. As we can hear the odd chicken in the background sometimes, or the crow. So they have a team leader who happens to be based at the moment in Canada and he works on their hours, which is a bit weird for him. And we have constant communication because they're either fixing something, which is really annoying. The one thing we have to sort out is fixing things more than once, or they're building something new. And it could be for a multiple of different clients. And so, you know, we have to map the flow of that and know who's doing what and what they're meant to deliver when they're meant to deliver. And that we tend to, I think we manage that pretty well. I mean, it could always be better, but I would say at the moment, the system works pretty well. And they only, you know, and I suppose sometimes I'm the one who gets, they invoke me, some of them, if they feel that they're not, if one of the client guys feels that the technicians are not answering their urgent issue or their plan thing, they'll organize a meeting and invite me because they know that I then scare the engineers in too. It's not that. It's I'm the one who can say, okay, do A before you do B. Because, you know, one of our guys might come in and go, this is the most urgent thing we've ever had, a request from a client. And somebody else will say, well, I've got one as well. And so the poor coder guy is sitting there going, well, I can't do both.
Robin, help.
At the same time, could somebody please make a decision?
Yeah.
And that's when I make a decision. Hopefully, most of the time, you know, we can support that decision. We can get in contact with the client and say, look, what you've requested is going to take 3 more days, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Or get the tech guys to go, okay, well, how long is this one going to take? How long? And asking these coders how long something is like saying, how long's a piece of string? I mean, they won't. They won't give you an answer.
I used to be a project manager for a bit of time in IT. I know what you're talking about. I'm tech savvy. I know roughly how it all works. I'm not anywhere near being an engineer or any kind of coder. So it's difficult. But you say that, you know, to me,
coders are like the creative guys in ad agencies as I was growing up. Yeah. Right? You say to them, where's my ad? Well, I've just booked an ad in a newspaper or a TV commercial, right? And where is it? And they're like, it'll be ready when it's ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't create creativity more than anything else. You can't. Sometimes you can do it in 5 minutes. Sometimes you can't do it in 5 weeks. That's just creativity. That's the annoying.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, a good example of that was I was talking to a creative once about that very subject. And he said, you could take a student and give them a brief and put them in a room. And they'll either come out with something brilliant, like let's call it an 8, 9 out of 10, or nothing. You put a seasoned creative in a room, he'll always come out with at least a 7. And, you know, but to your point, but as we live in a world these days, I wouldn't want to be in the ad business anymore, but now that it's all digital, that the plethora of ads need to keep being built, refreshed all the time. There's none of this, you know, 3 or 4 week cycle. I mean, things have to be done.
Yeah. I know. I see that quite often, even in the line of work that I do, that we tend to be, even the kind of the just in time supply chain. It is now actually just how other services work, like yours and mine as well, to a certain extent. You said, obviously, that you have to make a lot of decisions, and quite rightly so, because obviously it's your organization, you're the person in charge. To put it bluntly, the buck stops with you.
Yeah, I always said this in advertising, you know, it's very lonely at the top.
Indeed.
It's actually less lonely in this tech world, because I think the people are nicer. The problem with the advertising is they, you know, they'll happily stab you in the front and the back at the same time.
What does that mean? Because the lonely at the top is, I've heard that quite a lot actually recently, talking to people in your position.
What it means
how does
to
that
me.
Impact you on a personal level and a level of personal growth as well to a certain extent?
Yeah, no, absolutely. What it meant to me was, who can I really trust? Have I got people around me that are blowing smoke? Or have I got people around me that are telling me one thing and doing something else? There was always a lot of that, which you had to be aware of. And there was really no one else to share this, you know, because you can't really share it with the level below, because the level below are either, you know, for you, against you, or in just, you know, don't care. So you've got a third that might like you, a third that hate you, and a third that are indifferent, because, you know, you're always inheriting teams and things, and you know which third's which. You know, and you confide in one of them and you realize I've just confided in the enemy, you know.
Oh dear, it is a difficult one, as you say. It's important to trust, because as from a team's perspective, that's kind of the foundation of everything, really, right?
At the moment, I've got to say, you know, there's no one in our team I don't trust. And you can tell really by the kind of work they produce, the time in which they produce it, and often the time that they're available, because, you know, I'm sitting here in the center of the world. So America's behind me at the moment, Asia's in front of me. And I can see who's doing what. I can see, you know, when Eddie gets on in San Diego, he'll be on at 6 o'clock in the morning his time. You know, he'll be feeding the kids, will be running around in the background and stuff and joining our conversations sometimes. But he's there and he's, you know, he's doing stuff. And then he might take them to school. And I think what our guys love is the flexibility. And if you give people flexibility, then you have to trust them, but they also have to take responsibility. So, you know, you can never, you know, if you promise a deadline to a client, you've got to deliver it. You can't go, well, actually, you know, I went windsurfing today, so, you know, I'll do it tomorrow. It's like, no, you promised to do it today. You go windsurfing tomorrow when you've done it. You
know? That's very true. I like what you said about, you know, when you give flexibility to people, then you have to trust them that they will do what's right and that they'll take responsibility. And I think that's where the debate about flexible work and hybrid work and remote work and in office kind of debacle and debate is all about. That's where it's because for me, all of that is not about where you work or when you work, it's about how you work as a team, right? Yeah. And that you need to be unified on that as a whole organization. And then it doesn't matter whether it's remote, office, or hybrid. Anywho, important topic nonetheless, that's for sure. But I am curious, what is it that you have coming up in the next few months that you're looking forward to, that you're excited about, either for R Sports or for you yourself personally?
Well, on R Sports, to start with, I'm excited because there's two or three new business opportunities. So when I was in advertising, you know, a new business opportunity means you're probably pitching against five or six other agencies and you know, you might win, you probably won't, you know, unless you get on a roll. Sometimes that happens. But I'm talking here about people that have said, you know, we want to work with you guys. We've got this product. We've got one guy, an American out of Germany, who's built a product which will be for improving your hockey skill, stick skills in hockey, ice hockey or roller hockey, eventually probably field hockey. But it also has a medical application. So we're working with him to take this product, turn it into a sport, spread it around the world, and at the same time, take the medical aspect of it and do something kind of similar with, you know, physiotherapists and things. And that's, I'm really looking forward to that because that's really exciting. And it's one of those ones that could be huge. Now, I've also lived through the world of brilliant ideas that are huge that have turned to be complete and utter disaster and have done nothing. So I kind of slightly temper myself, but I am very excited by how this will develop in the next, well, year, but obviously I think we'll start getting serious about it in the next 2 to 3 months. So that's exciting. Some of the stuff that our current clients are doing and how they want to grow and how it's really exciting when you add with a current client, you add a new country or you add a new discipline within that. So for example, in the roller sports, of which we work with a number of them, you know, there are some we don't work with. And there's a country that we're about to onboard that will onboard all of their roller sports. And actually, that will be a very big sport inside their country. Now, you know, people don't really think that skateboarding, you know, but when you put them all together, it's actually quite big. And you go, well, okay, now we've done something really cool for this country. How can we get that into another country? It's never a dull moment. For me, there's always, and that's an appetizing thing. I love the thrill of the new business and I love to see how things grow. I hate it if a client comes in on day one and we do one thing and it stays at one thing forever. You know, it's like, it's frustrating because you go, there's so much opportunity here. How can we, and I've tried it sometimes with clients. Sometimes, you know, bless them, it doesn't resonate because many of them are really good at their sport, but not necessarily good business people, or they've got their own deals, you know, so they don't need anything from me. And I sometimes find that a bit frustrating. But no, I mean, the next few months are exciting. the rest of the football season is exciting. There are 10 games to go. Arsenal are top, only just by goal difference. So I'm going to have a horrible 10 weeks.
Be careful. You know, there's always the Euros to look forward to.
Well, I will, but I don't really care about international.
Interesting.
In the same way as I care about my team. So this weekend, there were two England friendlies. Didn't bother.
Oh, no, I'm with you on friendlies. I could never be bothered. I can't even be bothered with the qualifiers. I genuinely just watch the tournaments.
The qualifiers are awful because, you know, you pick England against Malta. Okay, you know that England's going to win. The question is by how many goals? Who cares?
Yeah, that's very true. Very
England, true. Poland, England, Germany. Those games you can get excited about.
To be honest, in both cases, both Poland sucks at football. I'll be the first one to admit it. Germany over the last few years has sucked massively as well. They've gone out in the group stages over the past few tournaments. But, you know.
It's quite funny because we've got right now our manager, Gareth Southgate. He's actually, since the World Cup winning team, he's the most successful manager we've had in terms of tournaments. But we did a poll yesterday. 3/4 of the people don't think he's good enough to take us to the next level.
But that's the English affliction. You always he's really damn good. Out of all the managers, he's the best one they've had since I've been following English football, which is probably about 15-20 years, give or take. But it's still not enough because it's still not. You will win the bloody World Cup. We will still not be good enough.
And people will complain. They'll go,
we
didn't score enough goals.
Yes, well, we could have done it better. We could have done it better. The style was a little bit off.
The waistcoat
he was wearing was just not so.
I will give you that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's those are the British. I'm not British born, but I am British passport holder. So I'll throw myself into that debate as well.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Robin, we started with football. We finished with football, which is a nice kind of bookend. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Absolute pleasure.
A chat.
Absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed it.